Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Okay, hello and welcome along to another episode of Left Unread. Hopefully this episode is a bit happier after Arsenal demolished Aston Villa last night. 3-1.
So my match day experience is quite a hectic one, actually. I had a really busy day yesterday, and usually the home matches are slightly less interesting for us to discuss in our match day experience.
Yeah, we don't. There's not much to say about the city.
I have quite a lot to say about my day yesterday. So I started trekking in the morning to Tottenham Hale, a disgusting area.
I've been there twice, and I've been mugged twice.
Yeah,
to Tottenham.
Well, that says a lot, doesn't it? Yeah. But to collect a new bike.
Nice. Harry's bike got stolen.
Yeah, not great.
If you've got Harry's bike, please give it back.
Yeah, please do. Put my number in the description below. So then I cycled that home, and then later I was going to meet a mate for a walk on the Heath, and on the way I was meeting another mate to give my ticket to. Actually, it was Raf, who was on the podcast a couple of episodes ago, and I had to get there a certain time before he went to work, and I've left and I've got to his house just before his house, and I thought, yeah, I knew I missed something. Forgot something. Yeah, turns out didn't bring his ticket. So I've called him and I've sprinted back to mine. Man. He's completely underestimating my pace here, because he's just thought, without telling me, it'd be a good idea to cycle down to mine because it's somehow on the way to his work. Kind of, little diversion. Anyway, so I've got my ticket, locked the door, ran straight back up towards his. He's called me as I've got back to his, going, yeah, so Costa, I'm just outside your house. I thought I'd cycle down. Don't leave you the hassle of coming all the way back and whatnot. I thought, it's quite funny though.
It's all gone wrong, really.
It's gone as wrong as it possibly could have. But no, he cycled back up and we met, and then he went to work. But
it's a happy ending.
And then later I went back to my grandparents, which I was at earlier, to have dinner. And then I met another mate to go to the match with. So three of us went together. And that's quite nice, because he went to the Wimbledon game with us, actually.
Oh, yeah, we saw him at the Wimbledon game.
Yeah, and we had a few beers before the match, and off we went. So it was a nice little day.
Yeah, I didn't really do anything. I never do anything on home games.
I mean, neither do I, usually.
Like, days of home games, I've just sort of sat there waiting for the game to start.
Nervous, sort of.
Yeah, excitement. That's about what I do. Went for lunch. Oh, actually, went for lunch. I wasn't a fan of the Villa fans yesterday, right? I've not really ever had a real problem with them. But firstly, went for lunch on Holloway Road, and they've all come out of
station.
Of Waitrose, like sort of stumbling out with a load of Strongbows.
Okay.
And then have just gone shouting in my face, Villa, Villa, Villa.
Jack Grealish.
Yeah, but like proper spitting.
Okay.
So yeah, I didn't like that.
Molecules flying at you. Yeah. No, not nice.
And then just before the game, someone walked down the steps outside our house and has just done a piss on our door.
That's nice.
Yeah. So wasn't a huge fan of that.
No, I mean, you shouldn't be.
No. But you know.
It's a fairly disgustingly typical thing a football fan does. You see it quite a lot on the walls and stuff, in the tunnels as you look by the Emirates.
Yeah.
You it on someone's front.
I don't know whether you remember in when we used to play in Europe, back in the good old days.
Ah, that's too long ago.
especially with some of the Europa League ties. Like, I remember AC Milan came and Olympiacos.
Yes, we had the
And they had to end up putting urinals on Highbury Fields because everyone, like, the Olympiacos fans just gathered there for the whole day. Okay. And Cologne. Do you remember when we played Cologne first European game?
Yeah.
And they were all there on the fields, and it ended up just literally being a field of piss.
Yeah.
So they had to put urinals on the fields, and the urinals were literally right across from our window.
Oh, nice.
So basically the whole day like was just watching people piss.
Steaming across the fields towards your
garden. A wrench?
Yeah, like a wrench of smell.
A wrench is not a smell, bro.
Is it not?
A reek.
A reek. I'm pretty sure that's
a wrench?
No, it is a reek. I meant to say something can reek. What we're kind
of... stench.
A stench!
There it is!
There it is, yeah. Was there not a stench? I don't know why I thought a wrench.
No. Yeah, there was, yeah, a little bit of a stench.
Okay, cool.
More of a stench of beer.
Okay. That's pretty typical as well, though.
Yeah, true.
It's almost quite nice, a little stench of beer.
Not beer mixed with piss.
No, not at all.
But Not too bad.
No.
Went to buy the Guna from Lathy.
Of course you did.
Not from Lathy, from Alex.
Okay.
I'm on the front cover of the new issue of the Guna.
I might have to buy one then.
There you go. Bought that by the Arsenal station. Went to see Fat Harry at his hot dog stand.
Yeah, free hot dog.
Fantastic, yeah, of course. He never charges me, bless his soul. I always try and give him money.
Never allows it.
No, he doesn't allow it. But yeah, it was quite a pretty perfect day, actually.
It's a lovely Friday.
Yeah. I was saying to Harry on the way up here, it's actually really nice being the first game of the weekend if you win. Because then you can just sort of sit there and enjoy the rest of the football. And it even better if teams you don't like drop a few points.
Absolutely.
Because you can laugh at them.
You have no stress. Like, you know that you can send memes to your mates and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's no pressure of you then not delivering.
Yeah,
you've when done you get last, that's weekend. Like what happened on Monday with us.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, but there's just a feeling that we've done our job. Like,
now we can sit back and relax and watch other games.
Exactly.
Although I've got no time off work, so I'm a bit annoyed. I'm gutted. I'm going to miss the big derby tomorrow.
The games are just kicking off now, actually. We're recording this on a Saturday, so...
We're recording this at 3 p.m. on a Saturday, and we're not missing anything, because every kickoff is a stinker.
I'm going to put on the Everton game, though, because I've captained Damari Gray in my fantasy football team.
He's doing well this season.
1.5 million.
Yeah, it's a steal.
Not too sure. He's no Emile Smith-Rowe, though.
He's not an Emile Smith-Rowe, no.
I also really enjoyed, I thought the fans were unbelievable yesterday.
We were really good. It was so loud in the North.
I thought there was going to be like a hangover from Monday's game. But there was a bit of
disgruntled actually in my section between fans.
Oh, really?
Booing and not booing Emi Martinez. Mm. I didn't, but I fully understand people who did.
Yeah,
because I couldn't be asked for the arguing, even though my
there were people. Made a difference. There were people behind us who were a bit upset about that. I think most of them hadn't seen what he'd said about us in interviews.
Multiple interviews. That's the thing.
It's just been so annoying.
Yeah,
yeah. I just don't really like him.
He's a great goalkeeper.
Yeah, good goalkeeper,
and he did wonders for us.
Yeah.
But it's just sometimes sport is sport and you don't need to run your mouth up
exactly.
to the extent that he has.
Just leave it. Like, fair enough, you didn't want to fight for the first team place. I don't know what that says about you, but fair enough, you've gone to Villa. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, just shut up.
Like, it's not really going to help anybody out if you talk about us in a negative light multiple times.
He's
you're
just
not helping yourself out.
We're gargantuan.
Yeah, we're massive. This is what Arsenal does to players.
Exactly.
No, the fans were sensational yesterday. Really, really buzzing, big atmosphere.
Yeah.
It always is on a nighttime kickoff. I mean, it was only Villa, but with all respect to them, it wasn't like
we did a light show before the game, didn't we?
We did.
We used to do that.
I did a side to myself.
I know.
At that, because I thought, we've not actually done one of those in a Champions League match. We started them in the Europa League.
No, we did. We did.
We've done
three light shows. One of them was against Olympiacos.
Okay.
But we did one against Bayern when we won 2-0, and one against Barca.
I also remember one against AC Milan in the first year we were in the Europa League in like the quarterfinals.
But now we're doing them at home to Villa.
There was a sort of a sigh of this is, you know, it's quite cool to look at, but also it's quite sad to look at.
I used to get really scared by them. Like,
really?
when we started doing them, I used to like turn to my dad and like shake him and be like, Dad, is this meant to happen?
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't really enjoy that. But anyway, the fans were really good. I also really enjoyed the Smith Rowe and Saka chant is coming right.
I was saying to Raf that actually, like, it's good. It's starting to spread, but you still get this hesitation that it's not quite. I mean, it's too elegant for football fans.
Well, there aren't really many lyrics.
But it never quite settles. You don't get it going for rounds and rounds.
Yeah,
You get one or two rounds, and then you might continue go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then nobody can.
I think the 1, 2, 3, 4 is the issue with the chant.
You think?
Because when you go 1, 2, 3, 4, no one then knows when to start. Some people start straight away. We're experienced fans, aren't we?
I'm in the away end,
so it's all right.
Anyway, should dive into the tactics section.
Yeah,
some interesting things to talk about.
Yeah, I reckon you got a lot to say.
A couple changes from Mikel.
Woo!
Let's do it. Surprise is the key word I think I'm going to use in this section of the podcast today.
Mm-hmm.
Mikel really used the element of surprise. I think managers do it every now and then in seasons where we always think, oh, okay, we're going to play this formation, and then we look at the lineup, we think, what on earth is going on here?
Mm.
And I didn't think that when I saw the lineup.
Yeah, to be fair, my mind immediately went to 4-2-3-1, Aubameyang left.
That's exactly what my mind went to as well. So it wasn't that, but you know what I mean? Sometimes like you just see us go to a back three or something and you think, okay, what's he done here today?
Yeah.
We didn't see that, but it was the same thing for the other team where where on the pitch there was a sense of them being flustered because they were not trained to play against the 4-4-2, which is what McKen implemented.
Yeah, they looked taken aback by it.
Especially for the first half. Mm. And by that time we had 2-0 lead and it was all quite secured. So yeah, we played a 4-4-2 yesterday and it was interesting. I was saying to my mates in the stadium yesterday that it was almost like on FIFA. You know when you play a 4-4-2 and there's like a diagonal line between the two strikers?
Yeah.
And it's like slanted. It's like little FIFA iteration of a 4-4-2. Yeah. It was a bit like that because Lacazette was a second striker who dropped in to number 10 roles. But from a striking position, it was very different to starting in midfield and coming really deep to play progressive passes and stuff like that.
Well, we pressed very clearly in a 4-4-2.
Yeah, and we were in a 4-4-2.
Which is what we did against...
we've been pressing in a 4-4-2 all season, really, in most systems. It's just usually it's a midfielder, it's the number 10 that joins the second strike, whereas Lacazette was playing as a number 9 for a lot of the match, because Aubameyang drifted over wide as well sometimes. But yeah, no, Lacazette found himself in a sort of right half space quite a lot, because he was the right striker and Aubameyang was the left striker.
Yeah.
So we kind of didn't have anybody in the left. I mean, Smith Rowe came into the left half space sometimes because he was playing in the left midfield.
Yeah.
But I thought that this performance really just went back to fundamental football principles.
Yeah.
It was really back to school, back to basics. 4-4-2. We didn't build with a back three. We both fullbacks were asked to underlap and overlap and just get up and down.
Yeah.
Very, very traditional. And I think it just, Aston Villa were not prepared for it.
No.
And I think when we pressed with two strikers against their three centre-backs, because they played a 3-4-1-2 or a 3-5-2, Buendia was like the key.
Yeah.
Sometimes he plays a 10, sometimes he joined the three-man midfield. But I don't think they were expecting two strikers to really halt their playing out phase.
Well, we suffocated Buendia completely as well.
We did. He was sort of boxed in between Partey and Sambi and the two centre-backs. Yeah. And then we didn't really have to deal with him too
every
much.
Time he got on the ball as well, there were at least three around him. We were sort of hunting in packs.
Yeah.
Which was much different to what it was on Monday night, where Absolutely. We were sort of pressing half-heartedly in ones.
I didn't think we implemented a mad pressing structure. I thought we played in quite a medium block. So you know, you talk about you do a high press, medium block, or low block.
Mm.
It's quite unusual for a team to tactically go medium block today.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like playing a high line a little bit, except it wasn't really obvious that it was a high line. I just thought when we went to attack them, it wasn't really high up to Martinez, but it was kind of in the middle of the pitch, and then we all sort of made it shuffled to one side.
Our defence was sort of 5 or 10 yards higher than it was against
Palace.
Exactly,
yeah. No, I agree.
Which I think actually really works well for especially our two centre-backs.
Yeah, and it looked almost at times like a 2-4-4 in that medium block, so you had two centre-backs, and then Tavares, Sambi, Partey, Tomiyasu, and then the four attackers. Yeah. So like,
and Ramsdale was sweeping a little bit as well.
And because the line was 5-10 yards higher.
Just as a quick side note, this is the most confident I've felt about a centre-back pairing and goalkeeper
in such a long time.
I think in my Arsenal supporting lifetime.
Yeah, well, I mean, I liked Vermaelen and Koscielny back in the day, but we had no goalkeeper to back it up.
Yeah,
no, I agree with you. So we played 5 yards higher, which was good. And I think that might have also been because maybe Mikel knew that with Watkins and Ings playing as a double striker in a three-back system, he knew that Watkins would always peel off in behind the left channel, a bit like Aubameyang does.
Yeah.
Danny Ings comes to feet a little bit more, but he also peels off.
Yeah.
So if we're 5 yards higher, then Ings would have less space to come in and link play.
He really didn't have any space.
And he didn't have any space. And Watkins would be caught offside a lot. And we backed the pace of White and Gabriel to
Yeah, that's the thing. It is, I think both White and Gabriel are probably a little bit quicker than Watkins is.
Exactly.
Maybe not White, but Gabriel
White's
for sure.
Quicker than like you imagine. But,
yeah, White is quick.
But obviously Gabriel's quicker.
I was seeing Wilshere was talking about, because he's back training with us, he was talking about speaking to one of the guys that does the fitness drills.
Sure.
And he asked who the quickest player was at Arsenal. And the guy said Tierney.
Tierney. There's no way Tierney's quicker than Tavares. I mean,
I was thinking.
Seriously, man, this guy had constant energy.
He was
unbelievable yesterday. And it was, because it was very classic, he didn't really have to worry about build up. He just bombed up and up and down.
But also, I think he's much more comfortable on the ball than Tierney is.
Yes, but I mean, standard's not that, the bar's not too high. No. For that. But it was almost like, I was saying to you earlier, it was almost like watching somebody get on an electric bike and just glide through the gears from 0 to 100 within 5 seconds. It was quite incredible to watch just Tavares run 100 metres 6, 7, 8 times during the match.
I mean, that run
up until the 90th minute, he was still doing it.
I was saying to my dad, it was like the 85th, 86th minute, and Smith Rowe was on the ball, and Tavares was just
bang inside, Tavares outside.
Yeah, and there was an amazing run in the first half where he ended up putting it into absolute rose.
Yeah. But the run was nice.
Yeah, and it came from the constant pressure. And he provided quite a lot more energy than Tierney has been on that left-hand side for a little bit.
As it was Wenger's birthday yesterday... We've never lost on his birthday. I'm very glad that's remained. I just wanted to touch on a quote from the big man. I don't have it word for word, but it relates to us playing a 4-4-2. Obviously, we played very similar formation, 4-4-2, with Henri Bergkamp up top in the Invincible era. And he said that at that moment of time, because football's evolved, obviously, but at that time he said that the 4-4-2 was a good formation because what you did was you centralised 60% of your team. So you had 2 centre-backs, 2 midfielders, 2 strikers, makes it hard for you to play down the middle. Yeah. It also feeds into full-backs being traditionally overlapping because the space is out wide. So I thought that was interesting, and it also links into the fact that we compressed Villa in the middle of the pitch. They didn't have the chance to play in behind us, which they naturally tried to do because they played a 3 at the back, and they did it in a more of a sit-back counter fashion, and it didn't work for them.
I think both our wingers and our full-backs meant that it was really hard, because they started off in a 3-5-2, it was really hard for their wing-backs to push on at all, because if they pushed on, we just had infinite room in behind.
We had 2v1 in those areas against them.
So, which sort of pen them back, and if their wing backs can't overlap, then they have to play down the middle. And
the puzzle of why Mikel played a 4-4-2 in this match is all coming together in this discussion. It's quite good.
And then Villa switched it at half time.
And just before we get into that, I think we need to praise Mikel a bit more, because he's really probably studied the way Villa played.
Yeah.
Low block, counter, great pace, great technicians in the middle of the pitch that can put little nice through balls into Watkins.
He is very tactically acute.
He is, isn't he?
You can say what you want about him, but he's clever.
I think he really marshalled all the spaces that Villa liked to operate in yesterday, and they had nothing in the first half.
Well, and he clearly, they'd had a look at Villa's key players and thought, who do we need to shut out?
Shut out Buendia and Danny Ings in the middle by medium block.
Exactly.
By doing that, you create a slightly higher line, and then you're trusting your centre-back still.
But also
shout out McGinn, because he has nobody to play those longer balls.
Exactly.
Because the line is higher. Shout out the wing-backs, because we got 2v1s in those areas.
I don't know whether I always watch...
And the 2 strikers press a back 3, which means it's hard for them to play out.
Exactly. I always watch when we make a new signing or whatever, there's Arsenal release behind the scenes on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I always watch them. And I remember when Mikel became manager... In that welcome video, he went straight into the analysis office.
Sure.
And he was asking him what camera angles they were using, whether we had drones, what they were doing, what they were filming and stuff like that. And I think that part of his tactical acuity just comes from that.
However, much praise we're giving him, I do, in my opinion, and I may hold my hands up, we may play a 4-4-2 for the next 2 months and be outstanding in it.
Yeah.
But my initial opinion is that I wouldn't like us to stick with it. I think the element of surprise and the element of how it worked against this Villa team, because 3-at-the-back systems can be used very differently as well.
Yeah.
But the way that they used 3-at-the-back worked really, really well. But actually, they knew straight away that tactically we were there to go for as well in a 4-4-2, because we had space open as well in pockets of the pitch as well in the 4-4-2. And they came out in a 4-2-3-1. They took the centre back off and they put. Leon Bailey on the right wing and for the first 10-15 minutes of that second half, they were coming at us. They weren't carving us open, there was a shift in momentum. And I just think that top teams and top managers like Brendan Rodgers will find tactically acute ways, just like Mikel did against Villa, to open up lots of spaces against us in a 4-4-2.
But I also think, it in terms of the 4-4-2, it just provides another formation for it teams does. We're playing to think about.
It does,
because you think, oh, either they'll play their 4-2-3-1, they'll play their 4-4-2, or they'll play their 4-3-3. So it's three formations that you've got to prepare mentally.
Exactly, and also what's quite good and very clever is that those three formations, they're not too dissimilar. The way that we play with them and the transitions between our attacking and defensive shapes aren't that dissimilar in each of those systems. There are slight differences, but they're not massive differences for us, A, to have to be overcomplicating in our heads.
Yeah.
But B, it's just annoying for the opposition because they think, okay, they've got three systems that are all quite similar, but in this system, Xhaka going there and then Tierney bombing out wide is the real issue we need to worry about to distill them.
Yeah.
In this system, it's Lacazette, in the 4-4-2, it's Lacazette coming in and linking absolutely everything up.
Yeah.
And that's the area of the pitch that we need to deal with. So it's just little questions that pop up for the opposition.
No, it's true.
And then when Lacazette came off with an injury, which I bloody hope isn't severe.
It's just crap, I think.
Okay, perfect. Well, when he came off, Odegaard came on and it was on normal 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
I think we owe Arteta a lot of praise because I wasn't expecting that performance and that sort of shepherding of Villa's tactics.
But as we said, it was what was needed. It was a must-win and it was a must-perform. And we did both.
So is Leicester. Leicester's a must-win because of the Palace game as well.
Yeah.
Not sure we will, but I'm excited now. So in this week's player ratings, I'll be asking Lowell for his top three players from yesterday's match. And then we'll see if there are any honourable mentions for other players that did well, because there are quite a lot of good performances.
Yeah.
Go on, in a particular order, one being the best,
okay.
Three being the third best.
I'll go one, Lacazette.
In agreement.
Two, Tavares.
Okay.
Three, Lokonga.
Okay. I go one, Lacazette. Two, Benjamin White, because I know it sounds pedantic, but he did say he wants to be called Benjamin.
Okay.
And three, it's between Tavares and Aaron Ramsdale. Just Aaron Ramsdale's distribution's been a joke.
Yeah, he also so just loves that man.
Yeah, what a bloke.
Obviously, honourable mention for Emil, though, who I didn't think had an unbelievable game, but every game he's just consistently good.
Yeah.
And obviously, goal and an assist.
So with Lokonga, I thought that there were excellent movements where he was driving and carving through the midfield and then switching the play and stuff. But I also thought in deeper areas, he almost tried to be too composed and he waited really long amounts of times for the other players to come on to him so he could change the angle.
I suppose
and he almost got nicked two or three times. I actually think that's why he came off.
Right.
Because there were two or three times in a row.
There was a time where he got the ball nicked off him on the edge of the box.
Yeah.
And that's as soon as that happened, Arteta called for the
switch. Yeah, but it didn't just happen once, it happened two or three times. So I thought it was a bit of a mixed performance where he did some things really well.
Yeah.
And it was worrying at other times because he was at fault for one of the goals on Monday and it's like, right.
I was just a big fan of his driving through the line.
It was lovely.
Which we haven't really. It was quite Vieira-esque, striding through the midfield.
It was that back to football foundation principle, but whatever you want to put it, where you have two midfielders, one goes, one stays, and the role of the one that goes is to drive.
Yeah.
When you play a double pivot in a 4-2-3-1, you very much get less of that because the number 10's role or the inverted winger's role is to cover those areas. So you're much more of a deeper playmaker. But with that, Partey suits it really well as well. You've got the ability to drive through 20 yards and then pick a pass off.
Well, I think
so. I agree that he was good in that sense.
I think both midfielders need to work on their shooting a little bit. Though.
Absolutely.
Despite Partey scoring his first goal,
it was so funny actually. So he hit the bar about 5 minutes before his goal.
Yeah, it was actually quite a good effort for when he.
Yeah, it was. It was a lovely technique.
Managed to hook it round.
And so me, Raf, and Jacob were having a bit of a laugh. Another fan around us, in our seating area, and we were saying, do you think Partey will ever score for Arsenal? Is that the closest he's ever going to come?
Yeah.
And then Rafa's going, next game, next game. And then he said to me, actually, Costa, I said that about Francis Coquelin as well. And after he scored his header, he had another header. He'd clearly been trained to go front post headers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was really weird. We rarely take good corners.
So many good corners.
Every corner we took yesterday was brilliant.
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
Our set piece coach from Man City is finally coming through.
Oh yeah, the bloke that gets and he always walks into Arteta. He's a bit clumsy, that man.
Yeah, we've got a dream team with him and Airport Albert on the
couch. Airport Albert is one of my favourite.
He's
men
a legend.
Of all time.
Yeah.
What a bloke!
I'd love to do an interview with him. I reckon he's got such a good backstory.
Yeah, word.
What else do we usually do? We do Arteta.
We do Arteta.
I'd give Arteta an 8.
I'd give him a 9 because I think just the surprise and just he really got everything right.
And what's our new one? Player of the Opposition.
Player of the Opposition. That is new. We didn't do that last week.
Yeah, we did.
Did we? Who was it last week?
I gave it to Gallagher and I gave it to Edward.
Yeah. Go on, you go first.
Jacob Ramsey.
He slapped that bin.
Yeah, it was a really
disgusting
good
disgusting finish. Yeah, I'm going to agree because nobody was good for them and he scored a lovely goal.
Maybe Leon Bailey brought a little bit of energy.
He brought a bit of energy, didn't he? A bit of directness.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to carry on with our new section. Harry's going to take over this week. What did we call it last week? It was a bad name.
It was a bad name.
It was like football player history or something.
Yeah, something rubbish like that. We kind of tried to...
Our new name for it, moment. The section is going to be called Whatever Happened To. And this week, Harry, who are you going to be doing?
A gent called Tommy Lawton. So, whatever
happened to him. Tell us about him.
Yeah. Right, so he was a all-round number 9 striker. He had everything, apparently, but we got him right towards the back end of his career.
Right.
For 2 seasons, for 35 appearances.
Okay. Any goals?
13. Decent ratio, but he wasn't in his prime. We got him towards the end of his career, but there were some points in his career which I found quite interesting.
His
personal life is also just a mess. It's quite an interesting
one. What sort of era are we talking?
We're talking 1936 to 1956 where this was a 20 year career. He played for Arsenal in 53 to 55.
Okay.
So he grew up grew up in Bolton, I believe. In Farnworth, sorry, but raised in Bolton. Obviously Bolton and Burnley are rivals. And he played amateur football at a club called Rossendale United before he turned professional at Burnley at the age of 17. However, he also played cricket for Burnley Cricket Club, which is just outside the stadium where
that's,
we went.
Before the game.
It's a nice little link into the podcast.
Yeah.
Before his first big move for £6,500.
£6,500?
You know.
£6,500?
Yep, I like to emphasize. Anyway, for £6,500 to Everton, where he won the league before having to stop playing football due to the Second World War.
Right. Did he serve in the Second World War?
It doesn't say on Wikipedia, it suggests that he didn't.
Okay.
Maybe footballers had exemptions or something. I don't know about it at that time.
There was one that I was looking at that maybe I'll do him in a later section, but he hid at Highbury. While they were coming round to sign people up for the war, he hid in the Highbury dressing rooms, lived there for 2 weeks.
Wow. When the war finished and football resumed on a more regular basis, he then signed for Chelsea for £14,000.
Wow.
And he scored a club record 26 goals in 34 league games in the 46-47 season. So, talking one of the best strikers in England.
Yeah.
And then he's just decided 2 years later just to cut from playing high level football. He's got a £20,000 move to Notts County in the third division. Very strange.
Have Notts County got that kind of money from?
Well,
in Division 3.
Historic, I don't know. It doesn't make much sense, but it shows that sort of footballers moving for big money, probably he got higher wages in the third division somehow. It has always been prominent. Anyway, he helped them win promotion by 1950. Before he moved to Brentford for another club record fee of £16,000.
Wow. He was commanding some high fees.
Yeah, he was, so he must have been good. And then Brentford appointed him player manager, but he got the boot after 9 months.
Okay.
Which was then he decided to come to the mighty Arsenal.
Nice.
We signed him in November 1953 for £10,000, where he saw the remainder of his playing career, but he wasn't at his peak anymore. He'd sort of slowed down quite a fair bit.
Right.
He then went into management, which is all quite boring. Essentially, in his football career, that's sort of it. He played for not only for England, but he played for something at the time called the Football League 11.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which played like charity one-off matches against Great Britain.
It's a little bit like in the NBA, you have the All-Stars game.
Yes.
Yeah. Like All-Stars East, All-Stars
exactly.
West.
Yeah, and they play against Great Britain, a bit like the Olympic team.
Right.
And his ashes are buried in the Natural Football Museum, and in 2003 he was inducted into the English Football Hall of Fame. So that was his sort of playing career.
Right.
his personal life is fairly hectic.
Okay.
So he married a woman called Rosalind May Kavanagh. I don't know how to pronounce the surname.
Okay.
In 1941. They had one child together called Amanda. So Rosalie never watched him play during their 10-year marriage. She just decided she wasn't
just refused. Him.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's not a great sort of start to their relationship. Divorce was then granted with a decree nisi, which I won't pretend I know what it means.
I think potentially they were part of the Catholic Church and would need permission for divorce.
Sure.
Grounds. Yes. What were the grounds for the divorce that were granted?
Yeah, quite interesting this. So this was in 1951 after his wife Rosaline was found to have committed adultery with Notts County director Adrian Van Geffen.
Oh, okay.
So, you know,
so back from his old club.
He's gone to Division 3 for the money.
And she's with the director.
She's been behind the scenes with the director the whole time. So
interesting.
You know, scandalous stuff really. Anyhow, he never saw his daughter again. Amanda, the one that he had with Rosaline.
Okay.
Never saw her again, and therefore wasn't required to pay child support. So he basically had a daughter that he never saw for the rest of his life.
Okay.
It's quite sad. But he did hear from her later on in life, only because she was convicted of stealing from a playwright, George Alex Axelrod, in 1968, by which time his ex-wife, Rosaline, was on her fourth marriage and living in Jamaica. So they couldn't contact her mother, so they contacted her father, who she never spoke to.
Because
she'd been convicted of stealing a playwright's material.
Okay.
So it's all quite scandalous, his personal life. Yeah, there's lots of sort of ups and downs. And yeah, his first wife had buggered off to Jamaica with her fourth husband by that time. So
okay, I like that.
Yeah, good from her. Anyway, he married another lady called Gladys Rose in 1952, who he had a son called who he called Thomas Jr.
Okay.
Tommy Jr. Nice. Gladys was also divorced, and her ex-husband sort of cited Tommy Lawton as a co-respondent in their divorce sort of proceedings, because him and his second wife had started seeing each other whilst his second wife was still married to her first husband. So again, more scandalous behaviour. Okay. This did not go down well with Gladys's family, I tell you. They were very, very strict Catholics.
Right.
And Gladys was completely ostracised by her family. They weren't having any of her, or Tommy. Didn't like him. Yes, Gladys had a daughter, Carol, from a previous marriage, who Tommy just decided to raise as his own.
Oh, okay.
Which is quite nice, I guess, supposing that he'd lost his actual daughter.
Yeah.
So there's some sort of happy lining. And then their son together, Tommy Jr., went on to play rugby union for Leicester Tigers.
Did he?
Yeah.
Nice. Lad.
Yeah. And then it goes on and on. This guy had quite a creative mind, it seems, because he starred alongside actresses Thora Heard and Diana Dawes in the 1953 film The Great Game.
Okay. Which
I haven't seen, but it must be to do with football, because he played himself in a cameo. He made a cameo as himself in it.
Right.
Which I don't really know where I stand on that. Is that a good or a bad thing?
Well, I don't know. Don't mind.
We'll have to give it a watch. But he also, throughout the 1950s, on the backdrop of his personal life being so scandalous, He went on to appear on What's My Line, which was like a radio and television programme, and he published four books. Tommy Lawton's All-Star Football Book, Soccer the Lawton Way, My 20 Years of Soccer, and When the Cheering Stops.
Right, so he's really dining out on his
He's really, his playing really career. Dragging every juice of energy of his playing career out in books.
Well, fair play to him.
But he had an eventful life.
Better than Peter Story, who just decided to turn to being a criminal.
Yeah.
So I respect that from him.
Yeah, decent from Tommy.
Nice. Well, thank you for that, Harry.
That's all right.
Okay, so I'm just editing this now and was researching Tommy Lawton a bit more because I was quite interested in him. And I was reading an article that he actually had to beg for money after he retired, which I just thought I'd add in there on top of Harry's stuff. So it was an article in 2016 on the BBC, and there were some letters that were written from him to Lord Attenborough, where he asked for a loan of £250, which is about £3,700 today, because during his playing career, he earned only £15 a week, which roughly about £200 in today's money. And he fell on really hard times after he retired, and
these letters that he wrote to Lord Attenborough were being auctioned, and they sold for like 400, 500 quid. I thought that was quite interesting. And the letters showed that Lawton later asked for help getting a job with a singer called Adam Faith, who had started a furnishing firm. But after these letters were written, his relationship with Attenborough turned sour when Lawton failed to pay him £10 for two FA Cup final tickets he provided to him in 1971. So there we go.
Okay, so it's time for this week's quiz. I'm going to be asking Harry this time. Harry's 2-1 up from last week.
Sure.
So here we go. Right. Who is the only player to have scored more Premier League goals at the Emirates than Aubameyang? And do you know what? I'll give you a bonus point if you can get how many this person has scored and how many Alba's scored.
Okay. There's only one person I can think that has. But then, am I getting overshadowed by the fact he had two or three really good seasons and the rest were quite injury-riddled at the Emirates? Okay. I think I know... Okay. I'm not sure I've got that, but let's move on.
Go on for it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, during Leicester's title-winning season...
Sure.
...in 2015-2016...
Yeah.
...what were the scores of Arsenal's two games against Leicester?
Easy.
And the scorers, please.
All of the scorers?
Yeah.
So I only get the whole point if I get all of it right.
Okay, that's quite... Okay. That's quite harsh. No, not really. They're both very memorable games.
Well, there was a hat-trick in one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And are there any crossovers of scorers between the two games? I mean, I know Alexis, who scored the hat-trick, didn't score in the other game. Okay, Welbeck would have probably been injured.
There are four scorers. Across those two games.
Okay, cool. So I'm just missing one player. All right, I'm probably going to miss it out by one player, like I usually do with these ones.
Okay, and the last question. In 2014-2015, Arsenal beat Aston Villa 3 times. What were the scores of those 3 games?
Fucking hell, no. Right, okay. 2014-15, one was the Ozil flick into Giroud. One was Ramsey's...
Do you want a hard question?
Go on, then.
So, 14-15 was the season we beat them in the cup final.
Right, yeah. Did you ask for all the goal scorers as well?
No. Just the scores. They didn't score a goal.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I think two of the scorelines might have been the same.
If you want me to make it easier, I'll give you it if you can tell me the aggregate scoreline from those 3 games.
No, it doesn't make it easier. It's fine.
Okay.
I'm just thinking like...
It does make it easier because you don't have to get all 3 scores.
I think I've got all 3, but if I'm narrowly wrong, I'll hold my hands up and you take the dub for the week.
All right. So who's the only player to have scored more Premier League goals at the Emirates than Oba?
I feel like I'm going to get it wrong and then when I hear who it is, I'm going to be annoyed with myself. I've gone Van Persie, it could be Walcott.
No, that's correct.
It is correct.
Van Persie.
And there's a bonus point for...
For the goals.
For both of them. I've gone Oba 91.
91?
Oh, that's all of his goals, isn't it?
Yeah.
At the Emirates, okay, Oba's like 51.
53. No. Oba scored 42.
42. And I've gone Van Persie 103.
No. 46.
46, okay.
So nowhere near the bonus point.
Fine. Though.
But you've got the point for that one.
Yeah.
Okay, score and the scorers from the 2 games against Leicester. Right, so 15-16.
Did I have to get the Leicester scorers as well?
No.
Okay. 5-2 away. Alexis hat-trick, Walcott scored.
Yeah.
And then here's where it's going to go wrong. I've just gone for Giroud. He did score. Yeah. Oh, he did score, then I got it. And 2-1 at home, Welbeck and Walcott.
Yeah.
You can't forget that one.
Nice. And good
then,
work.
Yeah.
And then Villa, the 3 scores.
Well, you very kindly reminded me, but I'd like to think I would have got it with a bit more thinking time. 4-0 in the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
2-0 at home? Well, this was one where Ozil's done that ridiculous assist to Giroud.
It wasn't that one.
It was?
I don't think it was. This was the season we beat him 5-0 at home and 3-0 away.
I got the 3-0 away?
Yeah. Well, we beat him 5-0 at home.
Are you sure it's not? Because I remember we had that Puma kit with the white big bit there. That's 24,
spent a long
15.
Time looking this up. Bellerin scored quite late on in that game. He side footed it into
was
the
that
bottom corner.
Assist against not against Villa then? Am I thinking of a different?
It
team?
Was against Villa. It was, but I think that was the season before or the season after, or we just won 5-0 that game.
And he, I think that might have been one of the goals in that game.
Maybe.
Okay,
but we won 5-0.
Yeah.
So 2-1 to you again.
Yes. So it is.
You are 4-2 ahead. Not too bad.
No, it's all within touching distance.
I've got a week to claw it back.
It's only one more game for the international break again.
I know,
seriously.
So
oh, that's dire.
Yeah. Okay, so it's another one of those podcasts where we've got a League Cup game in between doing our next one.
Yeah, unfortunately I'm not going to be able to watch it, which can be really frustrating.
Harry's put himself in for work.
Yeah, well, more so it's been just been given to me. You can't really say no, can you?
Yeah, that's fair.
Important, in my opinion, that we keep cup run going.
Yeah, it'd be nice to keep momentum going. And it'd be nice to see a couple of the players that haven't really had that much of a chance.
Martinelli, Pepe.
Yeah.
Maybe start Eddie up front if Lacazette needs a bit of recovery time.
Yeah. But Leicester's the big one.
Leicester's the big one, yeah. And they'd be really massive. If we got 3 points away at Leicester, it would compensate for dropping two at home to Palace.
Exactly.
And be in an okay position, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's hope next week's episode is as happy as this one. This week's one was.
Next week's one might be our first episode on Zoom.
Oh, yeah.
Over the internet.
Because Harry's off to Bristol.
We couldn't get a ticket. I couldn't get a ticket for Leicester away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We could only get one for Lowell, so I'm going to be going to Bristol for Halloween. So we'll be doing the podcast from Bristol.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll figure out something.
It'll be good.
Yeah. They're always good.
It's always good here.
It's a high standard.
Bar is up there.
The bar is high. All right. See you then, lads.
Take care, guys.